This is the Larry Mueller Show. I'm Jill Nadeau. We're going to talk about getting your vehicle ready for summer with our guest, Stephanie Stanke. Stephanie is the owner of Wooster's Garage in Weston, and she's also a technician, and she has years of car care experience. Is your car giving you problems? Do you have any questions about what tires are best for your car? Well, we'd like to hear from you. Join in by calling 800-642-1234 or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. Welcome, Stephanie.
Hi, thank you for having me. How are you?
I'm great. Thank you for being with us. From what I have heard, you pretty much have motor oil in your veins. Why don't you tell us about your family's automotive background?
So I grew up in a family that did a lot with the automotive industry. My grandpa, Dan Wooster, is actually just, I mean, he's just done everything automotive-wise. The family had a garage back in the day. He was an automotive instructor. He kind of does everything. So I just grew up watching all of those things. And so it just kind of piqued my interest. And then, you know, I just went from there. But it was awesome growing up in a family like that, on dad, mom, everybody. So
that's amazing. Now, your background personally is pretty expansive too. Now, how did you start out? And then how did you get to opening your own garage?
I started out actually in high school. So plenty of years ago, we'll say. So I started out by doing the high school automotive tech classes. And that really piqued my interest, especially around the time that I started driving. And then when something would break, I'd want to learn more, figure out why, what, how. So I just continued from there. And then I worked in various parts of the field. So parts department, sales, repair, even the service rating, you know, just to kind of get a broad experience from all of that. So I really enjoyed that. And then as I continued to just grow through the career, I just decided eventually it's something I just wanted to do for myself.
Absolutely. Well, tell us about your business a little bit. What services do you do there?
So our business does independent automotive service and repair. So we do regular maintenance. We do things like engines, transmissions, rebuilds, replacements, air conditioning, anything of those natures. We typically do not do any form of body work in that aspect, but we do all of the regular service intervals, maintenances, pre-planning trip type inspections, things like that. And then we do a lot of just, you know, anything from engines, transmissions, whatever might go wrong, we've probably seen it.
Okay. And now talk about this. I saw on your website that you have a certification. It's called an Ask Patty certification. Explain what that is and what does that mean for your business?
So the Ask Patty is actually something really cool that I found a few years ago. And what it was is that they take your other employees as well, not just the owner, through basically a training. It's a skilled training. It gives you a lot of facts about women in the industry, what they're concerned about when they go in particular. So that is just basically stating that we've kind of gone above and done a little bit extra in a different aspect of training to try to learn a little bit more about what consumers are concerned about when they come in, to learn more of their point of view and then how to better serve them.
Okay. Because that's kind of been a problem in the industry, especially in the past, where women don't feel comfortable, especially, or even people who don't have a lot of automotive knowledge. They feel like, I think this is right, but I'm not sure. Is that something you're trying to educate your customers on?
Absolutely. That is something I've seen for a long time in this industry. There's always been that stigma, even prior to, you know, having my own shop. That is just something that women in particular, but not just women, a lot of men too, feel very uncomfortable, or they don't know what questions they can ask. They don't know what questions to ask, you know, and they're not quite sure. Do they need that service? Do they not need that service? So we've been working towards that for a long time. We do different car care clinics where we show them different topics. They can bring their questions. We do a lot of one-on-one with our customers to try to further educate them on their particular vehicle and vehicle needs. And then from there, it's just a matter of really kind of getting them to understand what they might be looking at or not. And then also just showing them that, you know, yes, there is that stigma there. However, not everyone in the field really is trying to be like that. The majority of the people now really are trying very hard to show consumers that they do care and that they do want to be there for them.
And just quickly before we go to the phones, what are the pros and cons of going to a local owned garage like yours rather than going to a big dealership?
So typically you're going to find quite a variety when it comes to that in differences. So independent small repair shops, we may not have as many employees on hand. So, you know, you may have to wait a couple extra days. That could necessarily be somewhat of a disadvantage if we cannot get to it immediately. But the cost difference is usually also there. Dealerships are great for if you have a Subaru, for example, you go to that Subaru dealer for those recalls, things that independent repair shops cannot do. And they do training just on those things. So you may not be able to bring your other vehicles to that particular one if they don't have a lot of experience on outside brands. So independent repair shops typically overall will have a lot of experience in a variety of brands, a lot of different cars, trucks, and a lot of different services. Dealerships, you're going to be able to get your warranties covered. You know, they typically are a little bit bigger, so they do have a larger staff at most of the time. But it's just kind of it depends what you're looking for and what service you want as well, as far as what might be a better option for you.
Okay. We're talking to Stephanie Stanke. She's the owner of Wooster's Garage in Weston. And let's go to the phones. We've got lots of calls here. Mike in near Madison has a question. Hi, Mike.
Hey, I have this Porsche Boxster. It only has 50,000 miles on it. The issue is somebody told me there's a problem that comes up with these cars, MS bearing. And he said you should be really concerned. It can explode and the whole car is destroyed. The stuff I read on the...
Okay, we're having a little problem there, Mike, with your audio. Basically, you're looking at IMS bearing issue with your Porsche Boxster. Is that correct?
Is correct. Is it a problem, or is it something I don't really need to worry about?
Okay, Stephanie.
So I heard the vehicle, but what did you say? A bearing is what you were concerned about, or what was the component?
Yes, this IMS bearing. And so apparently there's some issue where it can go bad and it sort of destroys the entire engine if it does. But I don't have a sense as to whether I should be worried about it or not. There are online forums that are scary, and I just don't know what to think about it.
So when it comes to that, I definitely understand what you're saying, and especially on forums, things like that, you can kind of get any information, you know, and you don't really know. That is something that, I mean, are you experiencing any problems with the vehicle already? And are you doing your regular maintenance with it?
Again, this fellow told me he had one of these things and it basically, his went out on it and it was like $10,000 to fix the entire engine. The alternative is going and replacing what might be a fine IMS bearing. And spending $3,000 as preemptive maintenance, which seems silly if not really an issue.
Correct. Yes, that would be a little bit difficult to say without seeing if there were any type of issues up front. However, if I'm understanding this right, I would believe what he ended up having to do is replace the engine, which is typically far more expensive than looking at having that bearing replaced if that is a concern. If it is a common problem on there, I guess, yes, to be preventative, if you're planning on keeping it, driving it a lot, that's something you could look at doing, simply for the fact that replacing the engine itself would be far more expensive. That's oftentimes, you know, same thing when you see a common timing chain problem, you want to try to get to it before it goes, because, yes, the engine would be more expensive in the long run.
Okay, well, good luck with that, Mike. Doesn't sound like a great place to be with that. Let's go on to Roger in Madison. Hi, Roger.
Hello.
Hi, what's your question?
I have a Toyota Highlander, a 2019 Toyota Highlander. And going down the road, especially on the interstate, it seems to wander one way or the other, and I have to keep occasionally keep correcting to keep it going down the center of the lane. Is this something that could be aligned, or there seems to be like an inch or so of play in the wheel before the tires take effect? What's going on?
So you could, I don't know if you've had this inspected or looked at. So just without knowing that, you may want to look and just make sure you don't have anything like a loose ball joint or any type of suspension component that came loose that is starting to pull you left, right. You do also maybe want to look at your tire pressure just to make sure, because if you do have tire pressure that's off, it can cause, you know, some kind of a pull, typically not a wander back and forth. But worn out tires, a bad alignment can certainly cause those types of issues. Otherwise, you may just be looking at some type of a loose steering component. I would recommend, if it's kind of doing that often, then maybe just even getting under there or having it looked at just to see, because if it's a 2019, I believe you said, or 18, it may be under warranty still. So you might be able to take that to the dealer and they may be able to take care of that.
Okay. Thanks for the question, Roger. Appreciate it. Let's go to Diana in Madison. Hi, Diana.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I'm going to be taking a trip down south. And back in the day, when you were driving on the interstate, and if there were, you know, long stops, that you didn't want to run your air conditioner while you were stopped because of overheating. And I was just wondering if now with, you know, the cars that are a little more modern, what is the best thinking about that as far as running air conditioners?
So typically now it's not really a big concern, especially for short stops. You know, if you're going through a drive-through or something like that, that is not typically a major concern on newer vehicles, especially if it's been, you know, well-maintained and serviced and you don't have, you know, low coolant, you don't have fans that aren't operating properly. So I would typically think for a trip, if you're, you know, like I said, stopping for a drive-through and then getting back on the highway, it's really not that harmful to run the air conditioning now. I do know on older vehicles that may be more of a concern, but I mean, if you have your fans are working properly and you have your coolants full, I mean, doing those sort of quick stops on your trip, that shouldn't be a concern if everything is operating well on newer vehicles.
Okay, thank you for that, Diana. We got an email from Justin in Milwaukee who said his 2014 Subaru Forester has jerky acceleration when the AC is on. What might be wrong?
And you said it was what year, Forester?
A 2014.
A 2014 Forester, and it's only doing that when the air conditioning is on and it's got jerky acceleration?
Apparently, that's what he sent us, so I'm assuming that, yeah.
Okay.
Not quite sure about that one.
That would be something. I mean, there are some common problems, but that would be something in particular that, without having further information or being able to ask a few questions regarding, like, when you're saying the jerky inspection, it's hard to say without an inspection on something of that nature, because it would be very complicated to see. I mean, you could have an air conditioning pump, for example, that might be causing some sort of a draw, but I really don't want to misguide him on that one. That is something that, without seeing what it's actually doing and when it's kicking on versus what's going on there, that might be an inspection worthy question. I mean, like I said, that could be causing a problem, but that's very hard to say without seeing what it's physically doing.
Okay, great. Thank you. We are, you're listening to the Larry Mueller Show. I'm Jill Nadeau. Tyler Ditter is our technical director today, and Jane Rotunda is our on-air producer. And we're talking about vehicle maintenance with Stephanie Stankey today. Join in by calling 800-642-1234 or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. We've got some open lines so we can get you in pretty quick. Let's just take another email, Stephanie. Jill emailed, not me, that she has a 2010 Honda Civic Hybrid. Now, she's never replaced the spark plugs, but her dealer is recommending it. Should she have them replaced now? The car has 78,000 miles on it.
So typically for something like that, when the dealer is recommending them, that could go either they're going based off of the mileage that they're recommending it, or they've actually looked at one in regards to there may have been a concern, you know, something of that nature. Typically when they're recommending the spark plugs, that is a really good service to do in general, shop-wise, independent or dealer. That's especially to prevent further problems from happening, misfires, things of that nature. So, I mean, if she's concerned about it, she can always have that pulled and checked. But typically, I would say, yes, that is something you would want to have done based on that recommendation.
Okay, great. Thanks for the call, Jill, or the email. Let's go to Dave in Madison. Hi, Dave. What's your question?
Thanks for taking my call. So I have a 2017 Honda CR-V. Love the car in general. One of the things that I don't like is the sound system. For reference, my previous car was a 2011 Volkswagen Tiguan, and that was an amazing sound system. And I don't know if it's the, you know, the sound system itself or the insulation the Volkswagen had or something else. But that's what I'm thinking about, is there some kind of upgrade, and is it worth doing for this car, given that it's not, you know, a Volkswagen or some German engineering car?
So for that, it is actually always an option. I would say, I mean, places like Best Buy, for example, they will do aftermarket installation of better speakers or, you know, a radio itself. You can get aftermarket a lot of times. If it's worth the cost, that's going to depend on you and what you would like to have for your vehicle. I wouldn't say that they are extremely expensive to do. I know that all the different manufacturers, they provide different speaker systems in the car. So that is something that you actually can upgrade. And if it sounds like it's just not quite there quality wise, I mean, I wouldn't think it would hurt in any way, shape or form to look into having an aftermarket system put in. I know a lot of our customers do that actually, and they go to places like Best Buy, or there's, you know, in our location, we have a Sound World. There's a lot of companies that do install that. Being that it is newer, you could ask the dealer if they have an upgraded system, but I don't believe on that particular car they do. I may be wrong there, but I don't believe they have anything of that nature for that. But that is something you could get aftermarket, and it shouldn't typically be too expensive to upgrade.
Okay, thank you so much, Dave. So Stephanie, you know, we're wanting to talk about summer vacation, getting your car ready, and basically it's unofficially here, and we've had some really hot weather lately. How should we prepare our car before we go on that road trip?
There are a lot of things you can do when it comes to preparing your vehicle for a road trip. There's a lot of basic things that you can do yourself, but the most critical things in general would be just doing a basic inspection on it, whether yourself or taking that in. You absolutely want to check your tires, your tire pressure, but that also means the tire condition of it. So you really want to make sure you do not have any cuts, gouges, bulges, low tread, inside, outside, anything of that nature, because when you're traveling, those tires are getting hot, you're on the road quite a bit, you know, that can cause an immediate, you know, chain reaction of not a good vacation. So there's a lot of things in that nature. You want to make sure your fluid levels are completely full. You want to make sure that includes your washer fluid, you're driving down the road, you know, bugs, things like that. It is a good idea to check your headlights as well. I know it's summertime, it's lighter out a lot longer, so a lot of people don't realize when their headlights are going out in the summertime. So you want to have all that checked over. Typically, shops will also do a basic, you know, pre-trip inspection of some sort, a basic inspection if you would like them to do that. And that would include, you know, looking at their oil levels, fluids, a once over, and also making sure nothing is leaking. You want to make sure your coolant is full. But you actually also want to make sure when you go on that trip that you supply your vehicle with a lot of extras that you may need in case you do have an emergency.
And what would those be?
So there's quite a bit of things that I typically have on our list. So I will give you kind of a brief check there. So one thing that we always recommend actually is a blanket for shade, because if you get stuck on the side of the road and you want to put that up there, water and snacks are always a great idea to have, jumper cables, or even better, a portable jumper. A lot of those will have a plug-in that you can use for your phone. You just want to make sure it's charged before you put it in the trunk and hit the road, but you definitely want to have things of that nature. You want to make sure you have a spare tire and the tools. And not every manufacturer actually comes with a spare tire in their car. And I don't know if a lot of consumers know that, but that is something you want to look into to make sure your vehicle has it. And even if it did come equipped, is it still there? So you want to make sure you have that, an emergency kit, you know, just in case. But there's a lot of extra things that you can plan on doing, but you definitely want to start with those and making sure you have everything in case a problem does happen.
Okay. And as far as like with a flat, you change your flat onto your spare. How far can you actually go before you know safely?
So I safely, I would say for safely, you would want to go as little as possible. Those spare tires aren't actually even rated for those standard 65, 75 miles an hour on the highway. I believe the one, you know, a lot of times they're talking like 40 miles that you know, so you may want to find something very close by. Oftentimes that's finding whatever happens to be open in the area. So, you know, you can look for chains, you can look for any of those places, but you typically do not want to try to continue your trip the rest of the way on that. You are better stopping, getting a tire mounted and balanced onto your wheel, and then continuing on. Those spare tires are not rated to get you back down that highway long.
Okay. We're talking to Stephanie Stanke. She is the owner and a technician at Wooster's Garage in Weston. Do you have a question about your vehicle? Give us a call, 800-642-1234, or you can send an email to ideas@wpr.org. And we'll go to the phones right now. We've got Will in Eau Claire who has a question. Hi, Will.
Morning, ladies. Thanks for taking my call. This is a general question, kind of you know, pre-maintenance, make sure nothing breaks type question. I just bought a 2014 Chevrolet Silverado 1500 two-wheel drive pickup truck from a small dealership in Iowa. I scoured the internet and came up with this one. It's in cherry condition. The owner took excellent care of it. The dealership looked it over before I bought it. Like I said, it has 18,000 miles. Everything is just fine. Any maintenance that you would recommend? You know, when you're talking about spark plugs and some of these preventative maintenance things, I just thought I'd call and ask if there's anything that you might recommend. That's about it. Thanks.
Thanks, Will.
Thank you. Great question. So with it being such low mileage, you know, really good condition thus far, really keeping up with your oil changes and tire rotations at this time frame is going to be the best case scenario for you. So you don't want to go too far, you know, over your oil changes. I mean, it seems like really low miles in good condition, it should be able to be a really good long running vehicle. But keeping up with the basic maintenance right now, you're not really at that time frame yet to where the manufacturer is going to be suggesting a ton of work to be done. You do want to look at those items going forward in the future, but you're not quite there yet. So just keeping up with the regular maintenance, oil changes and tire rotates, that's going to be the best case right now, and keeping the tires inflated properly so you're not getting any premature wear there.
Okay, great. Thanks for that call, Will. If you have a question, we've got open lines, 800-642-1234. Now, Stephanie, probably one of the worst things that could happen is that the AC goes out on your car when you're traveling in the summer. Is there something you can do to prevent that or predict it, or what should you do with that?
So the air conditioning is a funny system. It it can work great one day, and then it can go out the next day. But if you're already having any sort of intermittent issues, or you just have not used it in a year or two, but you know you're going on that trip, you can take it in and they can put it under vacuum. They can try to check for any small leaks. They can detect, you know, use the equipment to detect for something of that nature. If it seems like you have to constantly refill your AC over and over again, you may want to do the same thing. As long as your belts are in good condition too, that is another item to check, because if your belt goes, you know, that can, I mean, that's, AC is also one of the concerns there, you know, with losing it. But typically there's not really anything you can do to prevent it, more so than, you know, if you're already kind of experiencing an issue, have it looked at if it has not been used in a while. Otherwise, that's kind of one of those unfortunate, if it's going to go, it's going to go.
Okay. Yeah. And hopefully not. So we'll send good vibes to you for that. Let's go back to the phones. We've got Bob and Franklin with a question. Hi, Bob.
Oh, hi. Thank you for taking my call. We have an Audi A4 to 2019. And when we come to a complete stop at like a stoplight, the engine will turn off. And then when you take your foot off the brake, the engine turns back on again. So that happens quite a bit in the city. And I was wondering if that causes any extra air, wear on the engine or maybe the starter. Are there any issues with that?
As of right now, I haven't seen really any concerns yet, but it is pretty new. Something like that, I think maybe I just don't see them yet because the newer ones would be going back to the dealer if there were concerns. As of right now, I'm not knowing of any particular issues with that causing it. The auto start-stop feature, they have that on a lot of new vehicles right now, and thus far we're not noticing anything in particular, but I can find out more on that for you.
Okay, thank you, Bob. I've got a hybrid, so I've noticed that sometimes it doesn't seem to be any rhyme or reason. It will just, the motor will stop, but that also means the heater stops and the AC stops too. Is that something, because I have a little bit older hybrid, is that something that happens with hybrids, or is that something that's unusual with them? So, yeah, okay. the motor turns off, the gas motor turns off. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. So that's just part of being a hybrid, is that the AC and the heat will turn off. Is that?
So typically, yes. And they do a lot of testing when they're designing these to put them together to try to prevent as many, I guess, inconveniences and problems mm-hmm. with them. But every manufacturer does those a little bit differently.
Okay.
I would say, typically speaking, there's not a lot of concerns if they're supposed to be just turning on off in that case. But that's something the manufacturers kind of determine what they're doing with those. And there's not really a way we can.
Sure. Yeah. You can't fix it. It's just the way it is. Okay.
You said the AC is also turning off.
Yeah, the AC turns off too. It gets really hot if I have to wait for very long, and it gets very cold in the winter if I have to wait for very long too. It's really
weird. I don't think it should necessarily be doing that. So okay. That's something you might want to have take a look at. I would recommend inspection at the Toyota dealer on that.
Okay.
One.
All right. Well, it's Honda, but that's fine.
Yeah, Honda.
It's okay. I know we all think Toyota and we think hybrid. Isn't that terrible?
Yeah.
I know. Let's go back to Rita in West Salem. Hi, Rita. What's your question?
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I can't believe this is the Larry Mueller show and I'm talking about cars. How wonderful. Here's the deal. I have a granddaughter who drives a 2014 Ford Escape. I mean, a 2010 Ford Escape. And she's over the moon happy with it. So there's never anything wrong with it. But when I ride with her, it's very rattly. And this has been going on for a little more than a year now. So I took it in and they tightened up all the motor mounts. They were sure that was it. And, you know, a few bucks. And it's just still as rattly. So then I took it in and they said, oh, there are rocks in some kind of a panel. So they did that. It still rattles. Now, speaking of things we might just have to live with, is that one of them?
So typically I would say no. I mean, depending what is causing it, most of the time it shouldn't be just like rattling a ton. And I guess there would be a couple different things I would look at if it came into my shop. I would look at the heat shield, for example, to see if that is just rattling on the exhaust. And it is an older vehicle, so sometimes things start getting a little bit looser. So, you know, you may have a suspension component making that noise. But it would also depend on the type of rattle, because if it's something that sounds like a component or something is loose, like I said, a heat shield rattling against the exhaust, for example, or if it's just maybe more the car itself might be creaking a little bit, if it has a lot of rust or something of that nature. If you're concerned, you know, taking it in multiple times, you may try asking them to look at those specific things, or, you know, try to narrow it down a little bit further before doing so under these conditions. So if it's only on the highway, or if it's only when you're stopped at a stoplight and then it's rattling, you know, try to narrow it down a little bit more, because that would probably make it a little bit easier to identify what is going on there.
Okay, good luck. What a great grandma. Thanks, Rita. Let's go to Dick in Cudahy. Hi, Dick.
Thank you for taking my call. I have a question, basically three questions. Number one, what are the pros and cons of nitrogen-filled tires compared to conventional-filled? Okay. What happens if you mix hydrogen and standard air? And thirdly, if I don't want the nitrogen, could I take the tires in, have them taken off the rims so that the nitrogen bleeds out, and refill them with air?
Okay, Stephanie. So yeah, it was a lot of questions.
Yeah, that's okay. I'm just making notes here. So basically, the pros and cons between the nitrogen mixing of the tires, and then if you don't want the nitrogen, those are your questions, right? How we're going to handle that. What kind of vehicle do you have? I mean, is this something you currently have that you're trying to convert over from nitrogen?
It's a 20 Highlander or a 20 Toyota RAV4. And believe it or not, we were not told that the green caps indicate that those are nitrogen tires. Mm-hmm. And we even took it into Toyota, and they just mixed standard air with it. Then after talking to various neighbors, it kind of gets you a little concerned as to what is what.
So typically I know the nitrogen is a little bit, you know, smaller, if I believe, molecules and stays in the tires easier. We don't actually see a lot of that myself when it comes to at our shop right now. But nitrogen, I guess I'm told, is worth the cost. And it's more difficult, though, finding people that handle them. I would say in this case, and definitely go with the recommendation as well of your dealer. Kind of mixing them would kind of waste the point of the having the nitrogen, I guess, to best of my knowledge. But if you wanted to convert that over, that is something I would have them handle there and just start doing the regular air going forward. Because, yeah, it sounds like a lot of places aren't really familiar with them enough at this point, or you might be running into that type of trouble. It's supposed to help in some aspects with keeping the tires inflated better, staying cooler. But to the best of our knowledge, mixing it kind of just defeats the purpose of even having the nitrogen. So go either one or the other. And it might sound like in your case, it's easier just to go back to the regular air, because not all shops have even nitrogen capabilities, and that may be the same at that dealer.
Okay, thanks for the question, Dick. Cassandra emailed to ask that, in general, would you recommend using a small spare tire or temporarily patching with an inflatable sealer?
That is a good question, and that is actually going to depend on where the damage to the tire occurred. If it is too close to the sidewall, if it is too big of a hole, you really don't want to be attempting to do that with a plug of some sort or a patch that goes on the tire, especially if it's very close or on the sidewall, which can occur. You don't want to pull that nail out and try to plug it. That is not recommended at all. They typically would recommend putting on the spare tire instead in those cases. If you are comfortable with plugging and patching your own tire and it is within the tread, like towards the center, that is something that I guess you can do. I would not recommend putting those cans of Fix-A-Flat in. That can ruin sensors. It makes a mess. We see all kinds of things with that. But without knowing the expertise behind that, I would say typically put the spare on and then take it somewhere, because you don't want to run into a safety hazard there of the plug coming loose, any sort of issues there.
Okay. Thank you for that email, Cassandra. Let's go to the phones now. Liz in Pewaukee has a question. Hi, Liz.
Hi. I have recently purchased a Honda Ridgeline. It's a 2017, currently has 90,000 miles on it. There seems to be a discrepancy between my mechanic, who says that the timing chain should be replaced at 60,000, 70,000 miles, and the dealership says 120.
Okay, I'm kind of curious. I guess I'd have to look it up, and I can pull that up by the vehicle. But do you have an owner's manual for yours? Because you can also run through there as well and look. Typically, the shops are actually going to run on the dealer's recommendations. We get those provided through the same systems that we use. Your mechanic may be recommending it based on if they've seen, for example, multiple vehicles have the exact same problem earlier than that. But typically, most independent shops will actually go off the recommendation from the manufacturer, from the dealer. That's what I would personally go with as the recommendation, unless for some reason they're saying they see this all the time, all day, every day. But I mean, even then, we still typically go with the dealer recommendations in this particular case.
Okay, thank you, Liz. Andrea in Northern Wisconsin emailed that she has a 2018 Toyota RAV4. It's an all-wheel drive. It has 10,000 miles on it. Now, the tires were rotated a year ago at 8,200 miles. Toyota maintenance guide states that tires should be rotated every 5,000 miles or 6 months. Do her tires really need to be rotated since she has only driven 1,800 miles since the last rotation and doesn't drive under any special driving conditions?
I would have to say, yes, you still want to have those tires rotated. They do go off of, yes, they recommend X number of miles and months, but those tires are also still sitting in the exact same spot when you aren't driving it and they're on the same right side, left side. So typically the tire manufacturers will want to see that you've been doing regular rotations to cover any premature wear warranty type issues, rotations and alignments for that. Typically, we do have a lot of customers that do not drive as often. We still recommend that they go ahead and rotate every 5,000 miles just to keep that even wear no matter what. But it is hard to say. I mean, if they're not driving it that often, that's still a personal preference that they're going to have to choose. We just have to recommend that based on, you know, trying to prevent any premature wear.
Okay, great. Thanks for that email, Andrea. We are talking with Stephanie Stanke. She is the owner and a technician at Wooster's Garage in Weston. Do you have a question for her? Give us a call, 800-642-1234, or you can send an email to ideas@wpr.org. This is the Larry Mueller Show. I'm Jill Nadeau. Tomorrow on Garden Talk, Patty Nagai will be back to talk about how and when to water, why planting vegetables now is a good option, and why some popular annuals just aren't available this year. That's at 11 on Friday, 6 a.m. on Saturday, or online anytime. And right now we're talking about vehicle maintenance. Before we go back to the phone, Stephanie, I had mentioned earlier about how hot it is. I think that's not news to anybody, but one of the things that excess heat can contribute to is like a buckled road. Now, what should you do if you hit one? Or in the verse, what should you do if you hit this giant pothole? Should you stop? What?
So if you are traveling and you are in town, for example, you're in your hometown, but you haven't left yet, that's a great time to just kind of pull over, go back home, stop by your favorite mechanic, just be like, hey, just nailed this pothole on our lovely roads, and could you check it out? And we hear that probably 3 times a day. So that's really not that bad. If you are driving down the road and you feel it, I mean, cars can absorb that. They can take that a little bit. But I mean, if you hit one and it is just jarring the car and you feel anything, any shaking, any noise that's all of a sudden out of nowhere, you definitely want to pull over and check that. You want to try to pull over as safely as possible away from travelers, away from traffic. But you do probably want to make sure that the vehicle is okay, and call for a tow truck. You know, in town when you're doing 35 miles an hour, it's probably not the end of the world if you don't hear, feel, or see anything and you just swing by, you know, to have it glanced at. But if you're traveling down the highway, some of those bumps can get pretty bad, or even debris that's left in the road. You definitely want to stop, make sure nothing started leaking, make sure, you know, nothing of that nature has occurred, nothing is broken. But try to get as safely over as possible, or on the next exit, you know, somewhere like that, because that's just a bad situation for everyone to be stuck right on the side of the road, including the tow truck drivers.
Absolutely. Okay, well, let's go back to the phone. And we've got, wait a second. I've got a message here. Oh, apparently, we've had lots of comments and questions about the listener asking about nitrogen versus air in their tires. Air is 80% nitrogen anyway, so it is indeed okay to mix them. And the benefit of nitrogen is there is no water vapor, which means the tire pressure stays more constant with the fluctuation in temperature. So Yeah, we've got so many smart people listening to us every day. So that's really great information. Did you have any comment on that, Stephanie?
No, that sounds great information. I know it's not, like I said, super common for a lot of places to have it. So, yeah, if that's something that you have on your vehicle, it's definitely important to call around and do your research to see who you can work with and cannot on that issue. Yeah,
absolutely. And thank you all for letting us know about that. Let's go back to the phone now. We've got Lulu from Appleton on. Hi, Lulu.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I just bought a 2019 Toyota Corolla. It's my first Toyota because I want a dependable car. And there's two little issues that I'm just wondering about. First, I know you talked about plugging a tire when it's, and I just wanted to know about that because I was driving it around and I noticed a click and there was a bolt in the middle of my tire. And I took it to Tires Plus and they did, were able to plug it. And I'm just wondering about the continued safety of that tire. And the other question is, there is a weird little sound coming from the dashboard. I call it the angry bee sound. And I've taken it to my mechanic, and he is just the same as me. He's like, I don't know where this is coming from. I cannot figure out where it's coming from, but it's kind of annoying. And I'm just wondering if anybody else has had that issue.
Okay. Thanks, Lulu.
Thank you. So to go to your first question about the tire plug, typically places like, you know, Tires Plus, any of those bigger places, they are not going to put a plug in your tire if it is too close to the sidewall, if it is in a dangerous placement issue. Typically, they will only do it if it is something that they can safely put in. It will hold. That is not something that any of those types of places would typically put if it were to be in a dangerous location. So usually that is fine. If you do start seeing over time, you know, a slow leak from there, you know, that tire's going low, they would likely then recommend a replacement. But if it has been holding, and like I said, they're more than likely it was in a good, safe location to plug, then it should be fine, you know, based on that. They won't typically do it if it's in an unsafe location on the tire. They would just recommend a new one right away. When it comes to the angry bee sound, we do see sometimes some very strange, and I feel for your mechanic, I really do, because I know exactly how that feels when you try to track it and you can hear it but you can't find it. It would be hard to see without seeing it, but if you're looking in that location, and I'm sure they have already checked these things, but you might be looking at, you know, something buzzing back by your radio. It could be something over there. I'm not sure. I'm assuming he's probably been digging around behind that dash a little bit or looking over there, see if there's any feedback coming back in that aspect, or if you have anything going on with like a blower motor or something sticking without hearing it, sometimes your little vent controls, you know, there's all kinds of components on vehicles now that are electronic and they can all make noise and they can all do weird things. But if it's in that area, I'm sure he's either going to next or has taken that dash out. We see all different sounds. I haven't really seen an angry bee behind a Corolla dash quite yet, but that's where I would be looking, I guess, to start with. And then also to look and make sure nothing like a penny fell back down in there that is just rattling around as you're driving, you know, something of that nature without seeing it. So hard to say, but I would certainly be kind of rooting around a little bit just to see if maybe some change or something, you know, slid down that is kind of getting a vibration from just normal driving.
Absolutely. Thank you for the question, Lulu. Let's go to Emma in Dunn. Hi, Emma.
Hello?
Yes. Hi. What's your question?
I have a few questions, actually. I wonder about synthetic oil. I've been told that you can go 10,000 miles if the oil still looks good in your car. And I've gone 5,000 and it looks pretty good. And then the other question I have about, what is the best tire for a Toyota Prius 2011? And I'm looking primarily at gas mileage. And then the other thing is, I've hit over the years two different potholes in the streets and they've blown out my tire. Is there any recourse?
Okay, so for your first question regarding the synthetic oil and the 10,000 miles, that is something that is going to depend also on your level, because You don't want to let that oil level go low for whatever reason. You know, over time it does break down. It does not wear, it can cause premature wear, things of that nature. We typically recommend to our customers that they're sticking at that 5,000-6,000 mile range when it comes to the synthetic. Another reason for that and why maybe a local shop would be doing that is if we're only seeing your car once a year, we cannot tell you when we start seeing something wearing out, or if you did accumulate an oil leak, we may not find out until after the fact, because 10,000 miles could be a long time, you know, on a vehicle, and that oil can be breaking down a little bit faster. There could be leaks, there could be other problems going on with it. We typically recommend that 5,000 miles because we want to go by what they recommended on the oil, you know, itself, and what the manufacturers at the time were recommending. So that is something that you want to, if you are going to exceed that, keep an eye on the oil level too, because that does matter as well as the condition. But that's what we would have to recommend. And then regarding the tires and when it comes to fuel economy, I know one of the most common tires that a lot of our customers with Priuses, and for the most part, they usually get, it's called a Goodyear Assurance Fuel Max tire. I have seen that one, but we also have customers that recommend like a Cooper Evolution. They're not really listed as, you know, saying the best fuel economy, but they're still saying that they have a great experience and they like that. We know there's a lot of really good tire manufacturers out there, but I have seen a lot of them running that Goodyear in particular, but that is going to also be a personal preference on your budget, on, you know, what you're doing with the car in general, and how you like the ride of that as well. But the Goodyears are what we've, I guess, seen the most common and what we've sold a lot of in regards to those for the Prius.
Okay, great. Thank you, Emma. Appreciate the call. Let's go next to Pau in Brown Deer. Hi, Pau. What's your question?
Hi. I have a question. I have a 2016 Highlander Limited, and I bought new when I first bought it. And currently, I have some problems with the tire when I drive on the road, and it sounds like bumpy noise, like the noise from the tires are not like a smooth ride, and it's like bumpy. So when I take my car to the retail, to the local shop, and they say that one of the wheel is not, it's not rounded. So they recommend me to do a replacement. So can that be possible? A rim that is, you know, like a 2016 Highlander, that's pretty good rim. And I'm not sure why it's doing that.
Okay, so yes, it can be possible. Your wheel, for example, could have been, you know, someone might have hit a curb with it at one point, something like that, or the tire itself could just be having some sort of defect, or it has uneven wear, which could sometimes be caused by suspension. Sometimes it just has a bad belt in the tire, you know, that can happen as well. From what you're describing with it feeling like bumpy down the road, that could be a wheel that is bent, or a tire, like I said, with a broken belt or very uneven wear, and you will be able to feel that. It is possible you could be looking, though, at suspension or something of that nature that has caused that. But without seeing it, the tire itself or the wheel of anything, it is definitely a possibility that could most certainly cause what you're describing.
Okay, thank you, Pau. Appreciate that. And before we break to the news, let's look at an email, a listener email, that they recently bought a 2017 Passat with 65,000 miles on it. Now, Volkswagen claims that the timing belt on the 1.8T is a lifetime timing belt. And the listener is wondering if you've seen that a lot on the new Audis and Volkswagens. Would you recommend replacing it anyways? Their last Passat dropped the timing belt at 230,000, and they don't want that to happen again.
So I can definitely understand not wanting to have the timing go out again. That is never a good you know, experience in any way, shape, or form, and it can be quite expensive. So on the newer ones, when they're talking about that is a lifetime, I would see how long first that is under warranty and kind of compare that as well. If they do not have a recommended service for that, like a time frame at 100,000, at 200,000 miles, if they are not recommending that to be changed, that is typically something we would have to advise customers as well, that it's not a component that they're stating needs to be replaced until there is a problem or if there is a problem. Things like that, we would say, obviously, keeping up with basic maintenance, do not starve that for oil. There's a lot of the basics that go into it. And while I can understand the concern with not wanting to have to pay for that if something does go wrong, we do have to recommend going with the manufacturer's recommendations. If they're going to push 200,000 miles on it and they want to visit that conversation, then based on they still have the car, now they're getting close to that, they might be concerned. That is something that we can definitely look at. But in regards to that, we'd still have to go by what they recommended per se.
So is that something that you can see from examination if the timing belt is looking kind of iffy or not?
Typically, so if they're looking at a chain versus a belt, in general on cars, you have some that you can see within a matter of minutes, and you have some that can take you quite a bit longer.
Great. Well, thank you so much, and thank you for that email, listener. We're talking about vehicle maintenance with Stephanie Stanke, owner of Wooster's Garage. We'll be back with more after this look at the news. Helping you out with your car maintenance questions today. I'm Jill Nadeau, and this is the Ideas Network. Our guest from Wooster's Garage in Weston is owner and technician Stephanie Stanke. Is your vehicle doing something unusual? Do you have a question about proper maintenance? Or do you need an explanation for something that was done on your car? Give us a call, 800-642-1234, or you can send an email to ideas@wpr.org. And Stephanie, we have Lena in Stevens Point with a question. Hi, Lena.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call. I see a lot of people in Wisconsin with Subarus on the road, so I'm hoping that this can help some other people too. I have a 2017 Crosstrek, and it has the CVT, the continuously variable transmission, and it kind of just feels like poor technology to me. It seems like it doesn't shift when it's supposed to, namely when it gets into the higher RPMs, where if you were driving manual, you would certainly be shifting up. It'll kind of feel like it's staying in that lower gear, and then it'll kind of jerk into the higher gear. I notice this a lot in cold and hot weather. And like I said, it just doesn't seem like it shifts when it's supposed to. And I'm worried that over time, this is going to just kind of wreck my transmission. And it kind of feels like the only solution is just to learn how to drive manual and have control over it myself. I'm just wondering if there is a particular problem that can be identified that can help with that. Is it a computer problem? Is there additional maintenance I should be doing on the engine to make sure that, you know, it lasts longer? That's my question.
Okay.
So overall, the Subarus in general, when it comes to those transmissions, there are a lot of different manufacturers that have their own. What we are seeing, at least from our experience, is the Subaru CVTs are actually a lot better than the technology is a lot better than some of the other manufacturers that we've been running into. They don't technically shift, so they're not running in that option. So the general engine maintenance, like you said as well, yes, that is very important for keeping the engine running, transmission, the car overall. There's nothing that you can really do in particular regarding that transmission within that car to make it feel different when you're driving it. If you do have drivability concerns or it feels like something is not going well there, I would definitely have it looked at, because it doesn't really... it shouldn't feel like it's shifting super hard or anything of that nature. So the they do the best they can for the fuel economy and range, you know, in that aspect. So it does feel a little bit different. But overall, out of the CVT transmissions, those are a little bit better. You do want to keep up with your regular maintenance in general, though, like you said, for the vehicle overall, since there's nothing we can do particularly on that trans to change that. I mean, in what you have, but doing your regular maintenance on those is important. The tire rotates, you know, the same thing of that nature. They did have older ones that had more of a common problem with them. And from what we've been seeing so far in the newer ones, at least as of now, we have not been seeing a lot of them coming back with the same types of issues. But you are not actually that far from us. So if for whatever reason you ever want to like stop by and we can just kind of drive it with you or like see what's going on there. We work on Subarus all the time. It really shouldn't feel super awkward and like it's shifting really hard. So that may just be something in particular going on there. But there's not really a preventative maintenance per se or any way to change that for the trans.
All right, great. Thanks for that question, Lena. Let's go on to Katie in Manitowoc. Hi, Katie.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I had a question about my 2006 Legacy, Subaru Legacy. I have the check engine light is on, and I'm wondering if how serious it is, or do I need to get that checked out before I go up north this weekend, or can it wait?
Okay, so that is a good question. You can go ahead and take a look at that check engine light multiple ways. If it's not flashing at you, that is something that I would recommend either stopping by a local parts store. They can run out and scan it. So like any AutoZone can run out and scan that, tell you what the codes are. Then we would have to see it from there, but you can stop by an independent repair shop. You can stop by, even if you are traveling, even if you're out of town and that light happens to come on, you can stop at a local AutoZone, O'Reilly's, one of those places. They'll run out and scan it. If the check engine light is flashing, that is a different level of concern, I would say. That's usually a major misfire going on or some kind of, you know, it's something that you'd want to have looked at a faster. Without knowing what your codes would be, the best thing I can suggest doing is going and having that scanned and kind of going from there. Is it something that is quote unquote minor, you know, not something that's a laundry list of problems, so that you know if it's a problem you might be able to identify. Oftentimes an EVAP code is kind of common, and a small EVAP code could even be something if you forget to put the gas cap on all the way. So you can just stop at any one of those places. AutoZone typically just scans them for free. You can kind of get an idea what that code is, and then from there you can find out if it's going to be a serious problem or if it was just something minor, again with like maybe just not having the gas cap on all the way. So
okay, great. Thanks for that question, Katie, and get that checked out and before you go anywhere, right? If you've got a question for Stephanie Stanky, owner of Wooster's Garage, give us a call. Our lines are open, 800-642-1234, or you can send an email to ideas@wpr.org. And we happen to have an email from Mark in Scandinavia. I believe. He has a 2011 Toyota Tacoma and gets the oil changed by the Toyota dealer. Now, they always add an extra amount of oil above the 5 quarts that his manual recommends, and they charge an extra $10 for that half a quart. When he checks the oil, it is always overfilled, which Mark knows is not good. Should he insist on the amount shown in his manual?
In this case, I would. If it was my car, I absolutely would. If you are checking it and it is constantly overfilled, yes, there is a concern there. I would recommend not having it filled over the correct level on the dipstick. It sounds like you're checking that, which is excellent. I would say in that case, you can say, hey, I'm doing the 5 quarts. That's all I'm doing. If it's low, they may ask you to sign something, you know, stating that if it is lower after the 5 quarts, that you may need to fill it yourself, you know, something of that nature. But that is a really odd scenario. That should not keep happening, that every time it's getting overfilled. So that's definitely an odd scenario. What I would suggest, yes, going by your manual, you feel comfortable with having them put the 5 quarts in. You can have them put the 5 quarts in. And then if you need to top it off yourself after that, that's okay. You really don't want to be running with overfilled, you know, way beyond on the dipstick. You know, you don't want your oil too full. So I would, in this case, yes, I would just stick to what you're requesting, because it does sound like you're capable of checking that and making sure it's full all the way, and then just topping it off if need be. But that is what I would do if I were you.
Okay, great. Thanks for that email, Mark. Now, Stephanie, I was doing a little background for today, and I found out that you were a guest on the Drew Barrymore show in this spring. How did that happen?
So that was out of the blue. I actually thought it was a joke at first. Somebody was just pranking me. So that's, you know, so I didn't call them back right away. But no, they called and they said that they found us online, and we got to talking, and they were just the sweetest people ever you could imagine. I know the producer was just so nice to talk to. So we bounced some ideas around and they're like, hey, do you want to do it? And I said, sure. So yeah, that's how that happened. They found us online and called us, and it was awesome though. It was so much fun and they were just so amazing to talk to, but it was definitely a new experience.
I'll bet it was. And if anybody wants to see that clip, they can go to Stephanie's webpage, and it's WoostersGarage.com. And we do have a link to that on our show note for today. And you can go to WPR.org/Larry to find that. Again, just go to the show note. So very cool. You know, you were on talking about charging your batteries using a portable charger. And we talked a little bit about that earlier in the show. What type is the best kind to get? Because there's a lot of different kinds, aren't there?
Yes, there are so many different types out there. So at work, we have really big ones that we use. I mean, they're massive. I would not recommend, you know, throwing them in your trunk and driving away, because it's not the same. The one that I use in that video, and that's actually the one I keep in my truck. So that one is a NoCo Boost Plus. You can get it. I bought mine at AutoZone. You can get them probably online too. But I mean, I just went to AutoZone and bought that particular one. And I know we have that one listed as things to keep in the car. That's the one that I found and I use because it's so easy to charge. It comes with a flashlight. You can plug your phone into it. So it's got like a USB charger. You want to make sure it's charged before you leave, but it's really compact. It's worked wonders. Every time I've needed it, it has worked. You know, you just want to keep recharging it. But it's so compact that it really doesn't cause a problem with, I can only take so many things for my safety. So I really like that one. I've had good luck with it. And the cost was actually not that bad compared to a lot of the ones that are on the market. I mean, some of these are going for $500-$600. I think I paid just over $100 for this one. So, I mean, that's the one I use, but, when it comes to picking them out, you do want to look at what else it does, how long it needs to charge, you know, anything like that, because any of those additional features, now you're just saving space. So the extra flashlight, the extra portable phone charger, you're just saving space. It can all go in one bag. So, you know, you really want to look at those features. Some of them even let you inflate tires with them. So wow. Kind of dig into what you need. Yeah.
That's amazing. Great. Well, thank you. Let's go back to the phones. We've got Brian in northern Wisconsin who has a question for you. Hi, Brian.
Hello. How are you guys today?
Great. Thanks. What can we do for you?
Awesome. Well, my daughter has a 2015 Kia Forte. It's a four-door model. And it just started this year a couple weeks, maybe a month ago. But she'll be, if she's, I mean, this only happened when she's been under like 20 miles an hour. So she'll be coming up to slow down for a corner or a curb or a stop sign or something, and the car will just randomly shut off. The other day she was pulling up our driveway and, you know, 5 miles an hour on the gas, and it just shut off. Other times she'll put her foot on the brake and it'll try to accelerate. She just mentioned that to me today. We do have an appointment with the Kia dealer this weekend. Just thought I'd see what your opinions are on something like that. And I checked all the fluids. It's not low on any fluids. There's no check engine light, nothing.
Okay, so that one's a little concerning, you know, especially being your daughter's car. When you hit the brakes, if it's trying to accelerate, that's I would definitely keep that appointment. Yes, that is... kind of an interesting issue. I don't know, especially because you said there's no check engine light, nothing of that nature. Fluids are good. There could be something going on with your alternator and or battery that is causing, you know, just kind of a chain reaction of problems. I would definitely have both of those tested. You can, again, go to like a local parts store if you don't have a tester yourself or like a battery, something like that. I would start there just to make sure you're not getting an unusual chain reaction. It also could be something going on with that engine in particular, and the engine itself is now, for a lack of better words, starting to go. And so now it's giving her kind of, again, a chain reaction of it's hiccuping, it's doing this. You know, it's hard to say without seeing it, but that is concerning. I would absolutely keep that appointment. You would want to look at the battery alternator engine, of course, make sure there's nothing electronic going on. It is strange. There's no lights, no coding. It's just doing this and it's not seeming to recognize that. But that is something I would absolutely have to recommend having looked at, because if she's hitting the brakes and it's like accelerating, that's just a safety issue at this point that I would really not be able to recommend anything but having it looked at as soon as possible, just for the safety factor.
Thank you so much, Brian. Good luck with that. Let's go now to Gayla in Black Earth. Hi, Gayla.
Would not be able to recommend anything but having it looked
at. Gayla,
it.
Are you there? Okay. Let's go to Dan in Madison instead. Dan, are you there?
Thank you for taking my call. I have a G35X that I got in 2006. I've taken it to the dealer every year to be serviced. I kept it in the garage. I get it washed, and in the winter I get an underflush too. And recently I went down a driveway, and it felt like I went into a huge pothole, after which the car started making a lot of groaning noises when I was driving it. So I took it in to the dealer, and they said I had a broken rear subframe, and it was because of rust. So I'm just wondering, is there any, and I have to get a new car now, is there anything that can be done here in Wisconsin that really retards rust, that really protects the car against rust?
So that is a good question. And unfortunately, yes, you know exactly what you're talking about with those subframes. Those, that's not... It's not always fun. So as far as rust prevention goes, you know, it sounds like you've been doing a really good job with that. It's an older vehicle, so, you know, obviously it'll creep up over time. When you get your newer vehicle, one option would be to get the rust undercoating actually sprayed onto those surfaces. You know, make sure it's clean. You want to take it to somewhere that regularly does this, though. So the undercoating is handled on clean surfaces. It's applied, and then that does help prevent the rust from just eroding those surfaces. And then from there, just doing what you've been doing when it comes to, you know, making sure it's washed and if it's being driven through all the salt and all those things this winter, you know, then you just get it cleaned again and, you know, kind of keep up on that. But the undercoating, a lot of independent shops and dealers do that. So that is something that you may want to be able to do. It's like a good way to kind of prevent all of that from getting right through to the subframe or the frame. So that would be my best suggestion, is to just have that done if you're going to be getting another vehicle, to try to prevent that.
Is that something you can do on an older car, Stephanie, or does that have to be on a new model?
So if it does need to be cleaned off, it depends where you go. Some people will not do it on an older vehicle and some will. So usually if it's a couple years old and it's a, you know, fairly clean, it can't prevent anything that's already there, but it can prevent further problems. So that's just going to depend. Some places will, few places may not, you know, depending on the age and the condition. If you already have like holes through the frame, they're not probably going to. Otherwise, I don't see it being a problem. You should just be able to do it from where you're at and keep it going forward.
Okay, great. And thanks for that call, Dan. Let's go to Darlene in Alpaca. Hi, Darlene.
Hi. My question is a little bit different than the rest, because I would like to know what your experience has been with these extended warranties, if that's possible. I have a 2008 250 Ford diesel, and I'm pulling a 30-foot fifth wheel. And because of the age of the vehicle, I'm wondering how those extended warranties work when it comes to the engine and transmission, which is probably most likely going to be my problems at this point. I'm just not sure if the whole transmission has to die or what happens before they're honored. And I'm wondering if you could give me any information on that aspect.
Yes. So there's a lot in regards to extended warranties and then aftermarket warranties, you know, kind of depending which way you're looking. When it comes to a manufacturer extended warranty, it's typically they're going to say it's covered for maybe an additional 50,000 or 25, you know, whatever they put out from the manufacturer on an extended warranty, maybe pertaining to just that engine. You'll really want to look specifically based on your vehicle for extended through the dealership there, you know, what is open by your VIN number. And then as far as what is covered in those things, they usually want the problem areas diagnosed and inspected anyway. So, you know, that's something you would have to work with them on if it is an extended warranty. Aftermarket warranties are handled completely different. So that would be a completely different topic that is not done through the manufacturer necessarily. It would just depend on those. Those get very in-depth with all of the different options and where it can go. But when it comes to a manufacturer's extended warranty, that is something that would be through the dealer. So it's just going to kind of depend if we're talking about a manufacturer's extended warranty just on that 250 diesel, then that would be right through them. You'd want to talk to them and see what's available for your VIN, what it covers, how many miles. If you have an aftermarket warranty, those are all going to be based on the verbiage that's written in that aftermarket warranty, who it was purchased through, if there's a deductible, what is covered, what is not, and what level package you have. So those could go either way, depending on if you're which type of warranty we're really referring to.
Well, thank you very much for that call, Darlene. That's quite a thing to get into. Those extended warranties are very complicated sometimes, aren't they, Stephanie?
Yes, they can be.
Okay. All right. Well, we do have one quick question for you before we have to go. Terry and Roberts emailed that their Honda Fit is a 2011 with 185,000 miles. Should they have the transmission oil changed or any other maintenance at this point?
So that's actually a really good question when it comes to the transmission fluid itself. Typically, in every place is a little bit different, but typically the industry does not recommend having a transmission flush done after 100,000 miles if it's not been touched before. Now, some places say it's fine. Some places will not do it past 100,000 miles. So this is a good time frame to look at it if you're looking at doing that, and that's something you regularly do for your car. I wouldn't be necessarily opposed to that. After the 100,000 miles hits, typically a lot of places will just do a drain and a refill or filter, you know, of that nature. So if that is something that, you know, you're interested in doing, I would certainly say before you hit that 100,000 miles would be a great time frame, because not every place is going to take it or recommend it when it comes to the transmission fluid. Now, on the fits in general, they are typically pretty easy to maintain. You would be looking at probably changing coolant and spark plugs at around this time frame. But other than that, you know, draining and refilling that transmission fluid, that's not a bad idea at all at that mileage. Coolant, spark plugs, and then, you know, look at any other fluids for any vehicle in general. You also want to make sure if it's all-wheel drive, you're looking at differentials. So keep that in mind.
Great, great. Thank you, Terry. And thank you, Stephanie. This has been great. It's been like automotive Jeopardy. How do you feel?
It's definitely very interesting. A lot of random, you know, good questions, very good questions.
Absolutely. Well, thank you again for being with us. We've been talking with Stephanie Stanky. She's the owner of Wooster's Garage in Weston. Tomorrow on Garden Talk, Patty Nagai will be back to talk about how and when to water. That starts at 11. I'm Jill Nadeau, sitting in for Larry Mueller today. Thanks for listening to the Ideas Network. Stay well.